And welcome, folks, to the very first Two Daft Yanks podcast. I am your host, Chad, and I am here with Corey. How are you doing today, Corey?
I'm doing much better since we, finished above you guys, unfortunately for you.
Who is we?
Oh, true.
Nobody knows
this. Chad's a Spurs fan, and I'm a Gunner, so.
This is our very first episode, so we are the Two Daft Yanks. And let's just give you a little background here. I am the Spurs fan. He is the Arsenal fan, and somehow we talk to each other.
Yes.
And
even on St. Tottering Hems Day.
Yes. And believe it or not, we have done stuff like this before, haven't we?
Yeah, a while back. So that's actually one of my goals, is to get Hong Kong Man U guy to re-find us again.
Yes, so Corey and I had another somewhat successful podcast a few years ago, but then the Suits, who own the website, started cracking down on us for no reason, and we quit.
Yeah.
Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, that whole go recruit other writers thing was like, no.
Like, we want you to work. Right. Yeah, we want you to work twice as much so we can make twice the money.
Yes.
So that didn't work out for us. And so here we are. So we're excited to be here. Today was obviously a big day in the Barclays Premier League. Yes.
Drama.
And so let's just run through the scores here really quick, and then we'll talk about the two games that meant the most today, which just happened to be for the two sides that we support. So on the day, we had Chelsea beating Everton 2-1. Fernando Torres had the game-winning goal. Liverpool defeated relegated QPR 1-0.
So long, Ari.
Yeah. Norwich City went into Manchester City and won 3-2. Stoke and Southampton drew 1-1. Fulham defeated Swansea City 3-0. Man U went to, or actually they hosted, actually, sorry. Man U in Sir Alex's last game at home drew 5-5.
No, that was in the Midlands. That was at West Brom.
It was at West Brom. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, his last game ever as manager for now, anyway.
Yeah, it's a good thing, because after giving up 5 goals, I mean, I'm sure there would have been a hashtag of Sir Alex out at some point. Yes.
Then to follow that up, the last two games were West Ham United defeated Reading 4-2, and Wigan Athletic, the FA Cup champions, drew Aston Villa 2-2.
Hey, good for that.
But all the drama today was for that last spot of Champions League football. And to give you a recap of Arsenal and Newcastle, here's Corey.
Yeah, so as Chad was alluding to, today's, which I also I wanted to point out, the match of the day that's going on right now in England, they did lead with our two games, apparently, so it wasn't us just, playing up our teams. But yeah, so anyway, Arsenal had to go to Newcastle, which in and of itself is usually interesting, because traditionally, even when we were good, we struggled up north. Luckily, this match, was in May and not in January, I guess. But as Chad and I were talking before we came on air, Newcastle the last 2 months has been absolutely dreadful. So, yeah, going into the match, I was pretty confident, though, that we get a result. But again, with teams that are managed with guys like Pardew, who can be, pretty cunty at times, you never know what you're going to get. And then, of course, there was the Mike. I don't know if you saw it last night, but Twitter was blown up with the whole Mike Ashley had apparently offered $1 million to his backroom staff if Newcastle had won. And a lot of people were freaking out about it, which I don't understand. It's like, how's the $1 million to the back staff going to be motivational to the team when, you know, the backroom staff isn't the one that's going to be playing? But
yeah, I saw that as well. I thought it was kind of odd.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as odd as it was, people that were freaking out that it was going to motivate Newcastle's players, to me, was even odder. You know, I mean, yeah, if they needed motivation, that's fine, but to freak out over it, I don't know. It just seemed like it was one of those things where if you're the kind of fan that's going to get nervous over something like that, you're just going to be nervous no matter what happens. But I don't know, it was amusing nonetheless. But yeah, so we ended up getting the result today. It was your typical Arsenal performance of late. It wasn't pretty. You know, we actually didn't really play that well in the first half, I thought, but a lot of it, both us and Newcastle looked kind of cagey and waiting for somebody to make a mistake kind of thing, and Newcastle arguably had the better chance in the first half, if I recall correctly. That Demba... Oh, nope, he's gone. The Papi Cisse chance in the middle of the box. He blazed one over trying to hit it on the first time, and it didn't... if I recall correctly, I think he could have taken a touch, which if he did, he probably would have buried it, but he didn't, and he skied it over. But we got a goal early in the first half from the new from Koscielny, which is now nicknamed in Arsenal circles, which I have now come around to the cost the boss thing. He got on the end of a second ball after a free kick and poked one home for the only goal. And after that, Newcastle kind of attacked in spurts, but it was one of those where they never really looked too threatening. And at times, we actually kind of sat back a little, which even for teams, or even for our teams in the recent years, is pretty unusual. So I think, again, I don't know if this is the Steve Bold influence or not, but we've done that a lot lately, to where we've actually tried to protect leads a little more than usual, or instead of like pressing for a second to consolidate the lead, we've definitely sat back and tried to play counter with the lead a lot more the second half of the year. So, I don't know, I kind of rambled on there, but I think it's, you know, maybe this is a bit of esotericness, but I think it's a sign of having more mature players now. You know, maybe that's a little bit of, you know, me hoping so. But yeah, I mean, you know, my Twitter feed is still full of people that are nervous as hell during the games, but even though there's a bit of nervousness, it just doesn't look like we panic anymore when we have a lead, you know, like we did in the last few years, especially in places like Newcastle. But so I don't know. I think it bodes well for next year with everything that's going on, you know, with all the big retirements and the supposed spending spree this summer. So.
Yes, so that was very good information, and usually folks, Corey and I go back and forth because we pretty much watch as much as we can, but since obviously today was the last game of the season, they all kicked off at the same time, and I decided not to watch 1 minute of any other game because it didn't really matter to me. Spurs had to win first for anything to happen, so...
Yeah, which so, next year, hopefully with NBC picking up the coverage, I'll be able to watch multiple games at once without neglecting one or the other.
That's true, but obviously during the season, you have games on multiple days at multiple times, so even you're able to see half the teams play in a week if you want to.
Yeah, and what I think it didn't NBC say there was gonna they were gonna have a lot of replayed games too, so we'll be able to watch a buttload of games next year.
Yes, I think all the games will be available on demand online afterwards if your cable company gives you access. So we'll see.
Yeah, which if I have access to that, that's pretty much all I'm gonna do during the week.
Yeah, so there is the Arsenal report, and so the Arsenal win. Clinched fourth place and a Champions League berth, making Tottenham's 1-0 win over Sunderland.
Sorry, had to do it once.
It's fine. I knew as I said. I mean, as we spoke before, anybody with a brain who's seen Newcastle play the past few weeks knew that they packed it in. They haven't really cared, and so Arsenal with everything to play for, going against Newcastle, who really hasn't put up much of a fight. That's a pretty easy thing to figure out.
Yeah, because even as a joke, I thought it was a little ridiculous, Pardew's comment about, oh, if Arsenal win 4-0 next week, we won't care.
And that wasn't a joke. He was dead serious, but when his fans got upset, he had to come out and cover it up.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, that even as a joke, I don't know, because especially, you know, Newcastle hasn't been that successful as of late, but they have some pretty rabid fans, so I don't know, it just seemed like that's not the kind of environment that even as a joke you want to say it. Pretty ill-advised all around, I thought.
Very much so. Well, his appointment's been ill-advised.
Yeah, I still got 7 years on that contract. How's that working out for you?
And his contract extension was very ill-advised. So, Spurs-wise, it was your typical Spursy type of game. This season, we've had a real hard time of breaking teams down that just decided to sit back, and Sunderland was sitting back. They weren't even trying. I thought we were playing Stoke for a while. They didn't want anything to do with the ball. They were just sitting back. And with our injuries right now, we were starting Parker and Huddlestone in the middle. So two defensive-oriented mids who offer next to nothing going forward. Even though when either player is on their game, they can offer something, but Huddlestone has been rusty because he's coming off injury for several years, and Parker is coming off an Achilles injury, and he's in the twilight in his career anyway, so it's very difficult to for an older player to come back from that injury.
Yeah, well, especially from Achilles. That's definitely, you get in your late 20s, early 30s, that's definitely an injury. And actually, I'm kind of, and I imagine it's because Sandro's out, but yeah, I'm actually surprised he's played that much since he's come back.
Well, yeah, we've had no choice because Sandro's been out. And
yeah, I mean, because like I said, Achilles, that's definitely something that's going to take a while to come back.
Yeah, so, and the only real options to replace him was Parker, because then he had Huddlestone, who hasn't been in form, and then we just have the young homegrown kid, Jake Livermore, who's wildly inconsistent in his own. So Parker had no choice but to play as much as he did. And he's gotten a lot of there's been a lot of negativity around his play in general. But, you know, it's really not his fault. He's doing the best he can, given his situation.
The few times I've seen y'all lately, Parker, my take on Parker is he seems to be the kind of player where sometimes, and I know we talk about this all the time, that, you know, the English love their players that just constantly run and run and run, but Parker seems like the kind of the player that sometimes he puts in too much effort, and not so much like from an actual effort standpoint, but it looks like he tries to make a play so much sometimes that he actually gets himself out of position.
Oh, no doubt. Yes, I agree.
On occasion, which, you know, obviously that's, you know, he leaves the, because I forget which game I was watching, but 2 weeks in a row when I watched y'all, the space he had just vacated was where the run came from, where the goal was scored.
Yes, and he's done that several times where he presses the ball in the midfield and he gets so far ahead of everybody else, and it just takes one pass through the middle and they're breaking in on goal because he's left his responsibilities.
Yes, and that was kind of our problem when we had Song, is that he'd bomb forward at the wrong opportunity or try to press forward and, you know, leave that entire area of the midfield open.
Yes, so, but in general, Tottenham completely dominated the game, had many chances. We hit a post, we missed a couple open nets, had two or three legit penalty claims that were not called. And I'm glad that you guys actually won, because it would have been awful if we wouldn't have gotten into the Champions League if somehow we would have drawn or not scored because of the incompetence of the ref, who from midfield, when Bale gets tackled from behind, the guy, Seb Larsson, has two hands in his back, pulls him to the ground, and Bale gets carded for diving. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Seb Larsson, formerly of Arsenal, by the way.
Yes, so Seb Larsson was filling in at right back, and he's normally not really a flat-out attacking midfielder, but he's more offensive than defensive for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much why we let him go, if I recall correctly.
But in the end, as Bale's done so many times this year, he hits a last-minute shot from outside the box, a good, I don't know, 23, 24 yards out into the upper left corner. He's just absolutely gone into great form this year. And yeah.
And it sounds like y'all are running into the issue when we, you know, several years ago when we had Henri, that everybody was so scared to play that, because y'all were at home today, right? Y'all are running into that issue where people are just going to come in and sit back, and you're going to be forced to either break somebody down with the eye of the needle type of pass, or, you know, Bale's going to have to keep hitting those shots from outside.
No, that's exactly what's happened this year.
Especially if you're going to use those two midfielders with Parker and Huddlestone, like you said.
Yeah, so that's what's happened, and it's going to get fixed. Obviously, Dembele's been battling injuries, but when Dembele's not in there, we're a much different team. So this summer, we need to find cover for Dembele in case he can't play, because we're missing that creative spark that we need to get the ball into the box, basically. We score most of our goals from outside the box. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's definitely not so much for Dembele, but for Huddlestone and Parker, that's something that, which, you know, maybe I'll get into in a minute about the Wenger's management job. Because, you know, that's a defensive midfielder is something that people wanted us to sign at the beginning of the year, you know, that prototypical English midfield destroyer type. But I think that's one of the things that in the modern game, you can't just have somebody that sits back and shields the defense if that's all he does, which is, I think, one of the things that has actually made us better defensively while still being able to score goals, is having Arteta sit back there. You know, he's not quite a deep-line playmaker, but he's, you know, obviously not not your prototypical defensive midfielder. But I think that's – but my point with that is, compared to y'all, with everybody sitting back now because everybody's scared to get burned by Bale, your defensive midfielders now have to do a little more to, you know, break that down. So it'll be interesting to see who y'all go after Because I think that's part of the reason why, like, people like, you know, even people like Pardew, they're going after those French midfield players now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's kind of looking on the continent, both because, A, it's, they're cheaper, but, you know, their defensive midfielders, you know, they're supposed to string, you know, more than a couple passes together than, you know, your typical English midfielder that's, or your English defensive midfielder that's basically on there to, you know, to get into people, you know.
No, exactly. And I'm glad that you brought that up about football these days is more modern, more fluid, and you just can't, or the most of the manager's philosophy is not to just have that one guy who sits back. And that's been the problem with Parker is he's been given that role, and ABB's done the same thing where he's not allowing Parker just to sit back and clean things up, which he did last year, and he was great. This year, he's responsible for kind of moving forward a bit more, and he just doesn't have the skill set right now to do that.
Yeah, and that's because, like you said, with all the fluid tactics these days, you know, in the old days when your job was just to win the ball and hoof it forward, you know, to the either out wide to the wingers or up high for your target forward, yeah, that kind of defensive midfielder was okay. But nowadays when, you know, games in the EPL especially, they're played much more on the ground than they used to be, or, you know, compared to the English game, even in the 90s, that guy can't be just, you know, a physical body anymore. He's got to have, if not 2 feet, he's got to have at least 1 foot that can make a decent pass, you know?
No, there's no doubt about that. So let me just wrap up my last few points about Spurs, and then we can move on. Sorry if we're dragging on about this, but these really two were the only two games that mattered today. So Spurs end up with 72 points, which is their all-time high in the Premier League era. And I think most of the media, who was rather critical of Spurs for hiring AVB after his Chelsea experience, I think he's shown to be a top manager this year, both managing the players and tactically. We've had to deal with a lot of injuries. Sandro's been out half the season. Our best defender last year, Kabul, played one game. So he had a lot of missing parts and a lot of players who don't fit his system, but he was still able to get 72 points, all while having a wage bill much lower than the teams that finished in front of us. So I'm happy and excited for the future. Corey, are you there?
Yes, sorry. sorry, folks. We're still working through the kinks on this thing. because that's similar to because you also didn't what you bought Adebayor second to last day or something.
Yeah, we left a lot of our deals obviously late, which is something that needs to be changed going forward.
Yeah,
as well.
That's another strategy that people, people being office room staff in the modern game really have to take a look at. In that, you can find some bargains on deadline day, but the length of the competitions these days, it's just vital to get that early momentum now. Especially when you're trying to put a team together, because I saw somebody make a pretty astute, or what I thought was an astute comment after the Arsenal game, was that, you know, even if we have the 70 million to spend or whatever it supposedly is, let's not wait to spend, you know, let's spend that money in July and not August, much less, you know, late August. And that way, you know, you have at least most of your preseason with your squad together instead of trying to squeeze everything into place, you know, after the season started.
No, that's right. And maybe we'll see that. I know it's an obvious or not an obvious, it's an overwhelming choice. I know the managers in their manager meeting, I can't remember if it was in the fall or last winter, but they all voted to recommend that the transfer window close before the season starts, which I think would be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, without actually looking at it, I don't know what I would think about that. If, just off the top of my head, what they could maybe do is just have like a full transfer window closing a lot earlier and then keep the loan windows the same.
Yeah.
And even that.
That'd be fair. Yeah, that'd be fair.
Yeah, because I still like the loan. I still like the way they do loans in England, where you can mainly do them most of the season instead of in the window, like on the continent. But I would also probably like to get the old way to where, you know, you can't do an interleague loan.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Nothing's going to happen for this next window, but maybe in the future they may change the rules. So before we move on here, did you want to hit quickly on your thoughts on Wenger?
Wait, hold on. Repeat that. I couldn't hear you.
Wenger. Did you want to talk?
Oh, yeah, on his management job?
Yes.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I mean, obviously people are always going to gravitate towards, you know, people who wear, win titles and score the most goals as the best whatever, the best manager. But I don't know. To me, this year is arguably one of Wenger's, in my opinion, obviously, this is arguably one of Wenger's best management jobs he's ever done, considering, you know, the complete loss of face during the summer, the complete loss of PR face, you know, when you sell Robin van Persie to Manchester United, which is the second season in a row you sell, you know, the quote unquote talismanic team captain, you know, and then the replacements that come in, everybody slags them off, you know, off the bat, which, you know, Giroud's still, you got people that are still bashing on Giroud that, you know, he'll never come good kind of stuff. You know, we supposedly had one of the slowest defenders to ever play the game in Per Mertesacker. You know, we have his supposed stubbornness and not spending and being a quote-unquote dictator that won't listen to people, that supposedly had a falling out with his assistant manager, which, you know, was obviously, you know, soon after found out to completely be not true, but still, just with all the stuff that's going on this year, and even though, you know, obviously we didn't win a trophy, and we had two, you know, highly embarrassing cup exits, I don't know, I just personally think it was one of his better management jobs. I mean, he played Arteta at defensive midfield the entire year, who did pretty damn well, in my opinion. He constantly had to juggle around the forward lineup to get to find goals, which we actually scored more goals than with Van Persie last year, which was kind of the plan, or was the hoped plan anyway, was to have people less reliant on one person and try and get people to take more responsibility, you know, in the team's offensive performance, which I think we've done. So like I said, it's one of those things that he won't ever get the credit for it, but honestly, I think this year was one of his better management jobs of his entire Arsenal career.
And no, and I would agree 100%. I think you guys were you're still the last team to beat Bayern Munich. That was their last defeat.
In Munich, by the way.
Uh-huh. And I think that was your last loss to Well, no, it wasn't your last. Your last loss in the league was against us. So you guys ran, well, I don't know, 15 unbeaten to end the season? Is it something like that?
Yeah, it was. They had people on my Twitter feed earlier that were trying to figure out if that was the longest unbeaten run we've gone on since the Invincibles or whatever.
Yeah, so it's a big run at the end to get into that last spot. So yeah, I don't like Arsenal, but I would have to say that, yeah, Wenger did do a good job of kind of cobbling a very competitive team together.
Yeah, because we also, coming into the season, we also had the perception of, you know, the defense being in complete shambles, which, you know, obviously signing Steve Bould had something to do with that. But there were even times during this season where, you know, some of the old bad defensive habits would crop up. But, you know, pretty much ever since the loss to y'all and Bayern, I mean, we've been, you know, we're not quite boring, you know, the old boring Arsenal, but we're definitely a more straightforward kind of no-nonsense Arsenal. And that's saying that also kind of reminded me of something else that I think some teams this year finally, or not that they finally learned, but we finally showed some of the certain physical teams that you can't just show up and kick us around anymore. That, yeah, you know, it may work a little while, but, you know, we no longer kind of shy away from challenges anymore. I mean, even people like Arteta can, I mean, obviously he's never going to get mistaken for a Joey Barton or any sort of midfield destroyer type, but I think he's a much more physical, or is able to be much more of a physical player, at least in terms of, you know, holding the ball than he might get credit for. So that was definitely something I was pleased with, you know, in terms of the progression over the season, was that, you know, even though we may lose, no longer can we, you know, do we just shy away from a challenge and, you know, we just get pushed around or get kicked off the pitch.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, thank you for those thoughts, Corey. It will be an interesting summer, that's for sure, for a lot of teams, and we'll talk more about that later in the coming weeks. But let's move on to today. For better, in my opinion, was the end of an era, in quotes, where Fox Soccer is no longer going to be broadcasting EPL games in the United States, and this was their last day. The crowd goes wild. Get in.
Yeah. Good freaking riddance, Fox Soccer. Jeez. Yes.
NBC will be taking over the coverage, and they're already running some commercials.
Yeah, that commercial yesterday was freaking epic.
They're awesome commercials.
Yeah, I actually got chills watching it.
Hopefully, NBC is going to do a fine job, I'm sure. Fox Soccer has set the bar very low, so I don't think I'll be disappointed in their quality come August. But Fox Soccer...
What's scary about Fox Soccer setting the bar so low as they did was they set the bar lower from the low bar that they had already set in the 90s.
Yes, no, they progressively got worse as a network.
Yeah, and that's pretty amazing that, you know, that they had the coverage for that long and they could never figure it out.
Yeah, they did a lot of things wrong. Too many talking heads. Let the game be what you focus on, not the opinions of Warren Barton or Winalda and all the other clowns they have.
Around the matches today, or you know, match days like today, is what makes football, soccer so interesting. And that, yeah, you got to have personalities, but to build a game and your coverage around the personalities, you know, that's that's something they do in Spain, you know, with the whole Ronaldo versus Messi thing. You know, the EPL, there's just too many, there's too many well-supported clubs with really good histories to not promote that over, you know, the personalities, which obviously you need to do, but just don't make it the focal point of your coverage.
Yeah. So,
like with, you know, the thing you were telling me today with the Bale watch or whatever.
Oh, it was, they were trying to sell Bale every time. Oh, where's Bale going? I'm like, that was in the pregame. I mean, we didn't know what was going to happen. Maybe Newcastle scores five goals somehow, and they win 5-0, and we beat Sunderland, and then we make the Champions League. But no, they spent their time, oh, well, where's Bale going to go? That's just awful coverage. And Bale very well may go. He could. I don't think that he will, but it's possible. But don't make that the focus of your coverage on the last day before the games are even played.
Yeah, no, that definitely would have been infuriating.
So we'll see what NBC has to offer. That's going to be a lot more access, obviously, and I think it's going to be good for the game.
Yeah, and they're claiming they're going to either live or rebroadcast. They're claiming they're going to broadcast every single EPL game.
Every game will be online at the very least, live. So
that's, yeah, which I'm definitely interested to see that, because, like I said, even during the week, that's probably all I'll do during the week is watch games. You know, even if it is having to sit through freaking rugby club Stoke matches.
Yeah. So
if nothing else, just to yell at them.
And it's going to come at expense of the MLS. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that impacts coverage, because NBC has the main rights for the MLS in this country, but now that they've acquired the EPL, how are they going to balance that out? It's going to be very interesting. That's about the only thing I can see that could sidetrack what they do if they try to promote the MLS too much.
Yeah, although I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, money talks, and so that should mean, you know, EPL yeah. coverage over the MLS.
Yeah,
obviously.
And that's what I'm alluding to, is that basically if the channel has the EPL, which is filet mignon, do you really want to, after you've had that filet mignon in the morning, are you really going to want to eat a hot dog, which is the MLS, later?
Yeah.
Probably not. Or at least I'm not going to.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it'll be interesting because, I don't know, my big beef with the MLS is not so much the quality, although compared to the EPL, it's definitely a lot worse and harder to watch because of it. But yeah, my big beef with the MLS is just like Americans, like most of the other American leagues, is that everything they try seems to be a little forced rather than just letting, you know, like we talked about a couple months ago about the trying to create a rivalry instead of just letting them happen organically. And that way, it's a real rivalry, and there's real passion and emotion there, and it's not just something contrived for, you know, marketing purposes because, oh, well, only people in LA go to soccer matches, so we'll put the Mexican club there, and that way we'll have an LA rivalry. And then, you know, what they're trying to do with that second New York team, which is basically trying to create a rivalry, out of thin air. So like I said, that's my big beef with the MLS, is that it's just, you know, there's too much stuff to just kind of contrive rather than just letting stuff happen and develop on its own.
Yeah, and those are issues that we will cover in great detail in the future, I'm sure. So, all right, is there anything else you want to get off your chest here?
I think some of the other stuff we could always talk about later, because it's more, you know, how the clubs or you know, how our clubs and the signings are going forward, which obviously there's a whole summer to do that. So.
Yep. So it is going to be an interesting summer. There's a lot of managerial turnover all through Europe. And then obviously we have international play this summer with World Cup qualifying. We got the Confederations Cup in Brazil. We have the junior version of the Gold Cup here in North America. And we have all the transfer nonsense to track, too. So,
yeah, which was already starting. Well, I mean, it's started a couple weeks ago, but, yeah, our transfer stuff was already kicking up as soon as the whistle blew today.
So we'll see what happens here. So we will be with you all through the summer.
Yeah, stick with us, folks. We'll get the Kinks ironed out of this malarkey.
Yeah, we're a little rusty on this. Yeah. Was that a car door slamming?
Sure.
Okay, I don't know, but it sounded rusty. It was just like we are. So, all right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And be sure to check back soon as we talk about more of the season in a whole and some of the big clubs and what they're going to be doing this summer. So for now, I'm Chad.
And I'm Corey. And I guess we'll leave you with the I don't know.
There we go. The gong of
reality. The gong of St. Totteringham. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. All right, folks. We'll see you soon.